Joining me around the table is specialist in family medicine with a special focus on sports medicine based at Valiant Clinic. That is Dr. Kate Jordan. Hello and welcome to the show.
Hi.
It's good to have you back.
Thanks.
Kate brings a wealth of experience. She's worked with international teams, including Scottish rugby, swimming and football, practices at the Scottish Institute of Sport. She's worked at major multi-sport games, including the London 2012 Olympics. And in the summer of 2016, Dr. Kate travelled to the Rio de Janeiro Olympic Games with the Great Britain team, where she worked as one of the five core team doctors providing care to athletes both pre-competition and for the duration of the game. So it's a real pleasure to have you here, Kate.
Thank you.
Alongside Suzanne Skelding, Director of Sport at RU Active. She's a mother of two grown-up children, Rick and Lauren, and Suzanne leads a team of dedicated coaches who provide quality netball training programs in the UAE. Recent successes include taking an U17 invitational team to the European Championships. That was in 2015, and returning undefeated, as well as winning Coach Manager of the Year at the Teen Awards. Welcome, Suzanne.
Hi there, welcome.
It's good to have you alongside, and he's back again, Spencer Lodge, founder of Make It Happen, father of two teenage daughters, and he's literally trained and coached thousands of people during his career. Make It Happen offers a broad kit of tools to businesses and individuals. He's a keen adventurer. He's about to climb past Everest Base Camp to 6,000 metres, heading off this coming Thursday. He's raised over $1 million for children in Africa with HIV, and he's one of the Dubai 100, the most influential people in the Emirate, according to Arabian Business. Hello.
Hiya.
And congratulations on that one. That's hot off the press, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good to have you here. And the reason we bring you together, we were talking about teenage boys a few weeks ago. It's the turn of teenage girls today. So let's kick off and ask you really off the bat. Let's start with you, Kate. What concerns you the most about the health of teenage girls?
I think for me, there's huge stresses on teenage girls nowadays that there wasn't when I was growing up. I think social media and the internet has really opened girls up to a huge forum of things and people to compare themselves to, which creates extra stress in a time of life that's pretty stressful already. For me, sport was my background, and sport is my kind of specialism, and I think it just adds an extra kind of impact to girls that maybe means that sport is a little bit more difficult. They're trying to keep up with their friends, and that maybe the kind of health and activity is something they find difficult to access. So I think really the kind of extra stresses for me are the main things, that kind of external stress.
I started off the show earlier sharing this study, studies that consistently show that girls lose their self-esteem en route to adolescence. Research conducted by UNwomen.org claims that at puberty, a girl's confidence drops at twice the rate of a boy's, and that during that time, 49% of girls drop out of sports altogether, six times more than the rate of boys. Suzanne, what do you make of that?
It's a really good point, and I think that one of the things that concerns me here is that we have a lot on offer, and we try to push the girls through to elite sport, when in actual fact we just want girls to be taking part. There's been an amazing campaign. There was the This Girl Can campaign in the UK that was just trying to empower women to get back in. It doesn't matter what you look like, how you wiggle, how you wobble, it doesn't really matter. But the Australian campaign recently has targeted girls, and with the this girls team, and I think that's something that we need to be really aware of, that it's all about the girls taking part. It doesn't matter how good you are, it doesn't matter how strong you are, how fast you are, it's just about picking up a ball or a racket or whatever it is that you want to do and do something. And we've seen a real huge involvement of some of our girls aren't as talented as others. It's a fact, you know, you can't get away from that, but you've got a lot of girls that are getting involved in the officiating side. So they are participating in sport, it's still a fitness thing, and I think that's a great thing. It shows leadership, you're part of a team, and that's the sort of thing that we need to avoid these stresses that we're seeing so much.
And Spencer, you've got two daughters, so 15 and 17 years of age. So what concerns you the most?
Well, the point you made is exactly what happened to my eldest. So Taylor was a really keen hockey player. She was successful. She'd gone up to county level and she then improved her game massively to the point where we thought she was going to take it much further and develop that. She turned 15 and she gave it up. So that's an exact example of what you're talking about. And as frustrating as that was for me as the dad, what can you do? She just lost interest in it and hasn't. She didn't replace it with anything. And that's
going to say, where did her interest go?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just a
gap. I'm the guy in the room, okay?
Well, that is interesting as well, because we're going to be looking a little bit later on about the things that concern you. One of the things that came in earlier is about kids not being active enough. What are they doing? Where are they going? And of course, as the hormones, as the body starts to change, and interests change with the hormones as well. So you just let that go then. So she didn't want to do it anymore. Well, so
you try and encourage it as best you can. I mean, she was really interested in it and into it, and that was great. Netball played a part as well to some degree. But to go from being a child that was 7 or 8 years old, became really sporty all the way through to 15, really sporty. And then, it just literally died away. And it died away to the point where, maybe she goes for a run every couple of days. You know, she does the sports that she does at school because she has to, rather than what she really wants to. And that kind of upsets me a bit, because, you know, being a keen sports person myself, I've always wanted them to pursue that kind of thing. I'm just glad I've twisted their arms to come to Killy in November.
They're going
to
be doing climbing Kilimanjaro with you.
They don't want to right now, but they're definitely doing it.
Fantastic. Well, a study Department for Education of 30,000 pupils found that an epidemic of depression among teenage girls, who are more than twice as likely to face anxiety and mental health issues than boys. And this is in the same article about dropping out of sports. So, Kate, the correlation, if there is one, or how you see it from your point of view, with physical exercise and things like stress, anxiety, or even depression.
Yeah, I think there's a huge correlation. I mean, we know scientific fact that exercise produces endorphins, which make you happy. And particularly if you've been a sporty person and then maybe you've dropped out. So, taking your teenage daughter as an example, at a time where your hormones are raging and you have a lot of stresses in terms of exams, if your body's become reliant on that activity and then you stop that, then your mood will drop as a result. And exercise is just a really good way of releasing steam, of releasing stress, plus those extra endorphins. It's good for sleep, it's good for appetite. So that there certainly is a correlation between the two. And I feel very passionately that teenage girls should be continuing some sort of activity. And I completely agree with Suzanne, it doesn't need to be to an elite level. It just needs to be some sort of physical activity, some sort of movement.
Well, according to the World Health Organization, teens, young people should be active, doing some form of exercise. It doesn't have to be extreme, but they need to be physically active for 60 minutes every single day. So are your kids doing that? Are they active? Are they physically moving around for an hour consistently a day, I wonder? So with the netball, Suzanne, yeah. What's the sort of, how young can you start playing netball with you guys?
We start them at 5, just get them involved, and it really is all about fundamentals of movement. Obviously there's a massive netball bias in the training and skill development that we do, but it really is a fundamental movement class, and that's really important because it's the foundation of everything that they're ever going to undertake, starting, stopping, listening skills, being part of a group and a team, and you know, working with the ball, etc. And we take them all the way through. We go through to back to netball as well, so that's mums who've perhaps given up the sport and then come back to it. So it's really important to get them going and to keep them involved. It's not just all about training. Yes, we do training sessions, and yes, if you want to get better, you've got to come to the training sessions. But we also organise leagues, and we've got a league for everybody. So at the mini age, it's a high five league, which is rotational, so they have to play every position. It's the most amazing thing. I don't get me wrong, I love the elite side of netball, and we went to the European Championships again this year in Ireland and did incredibly well. But for me, it's about seeing the girls on court. So starting at that real young age to really grow and develop. They create their own teams, they choose their own kit, they find their own team name, and they play lots of different varieties of netball and lots of different positions just to keep them going. Rather than being pigeonholed and say, right, well, you're tall, you're going to stand under that goalpost and that's all you're going to do. We need to get them moving and get them involved. And they're also involved in the timekeeping and the, you know, recording of the scores and starting some of that officiating. So the whole elements of sport are there for them. And we see that all the way through. So we change the competition all the time. So they play high five netball, they play versatility, they play fast five, where there are double pointers scored out. And we keep that going. And we've had a lot of our teenagers involved with their teenage I'm going to say boyfriends, I don't mean boyfriends, but friends from school who are male young lads who came along to play in our mixed league that's been running for seven weeks. if there weren't any happy endorphins flying around there, I'll tell you what, we finished last night, it was just incredible. There were whoops and cheers, and it was just the most amazing thing. And the funny thing was that the first week that those girls were playing with their friends, they all came caked in makeup. By week two and three, there wasn't a scrap of makeup left. They were sweaty on that court together, no one cared, and yesterday was literally a complete sweat bath. But just so much fun, engaged.
Do you see, though, a drop-off at a certain age? Do you notice at teens? I know there's a real dedicated netball league and commitment from a lot of... I was actually with a friend of mine's daughter who's 23. She's been playing netball all the way through and still continues to play here. But do you see a drop-off when they're hitting the teenage years?
Yeah, it's interesting. We see a drop-off, obviously, at the elite level. You've got a huge group at under 13, then it gets smaller and smaller up to the under 19 level. But where we're offering sport for all and so much difference, there's so many different things going on, where I think when they come to some of our training sessions, some of the elite girls come back to that as well, because it's their fun netball and they play that with all of their friends. So I think we've hit the nail on the head in being able to achieve a community of netball where people want to take part in it. Doesn't matter what you look like, who you are and how you play it, but it's just about being involved. And we've got clubs that are growing out of this. So this, in fact, I think the community is growing. So we're not seeing the drop off yet, to be honest.
A couple of people text in. Leah says, like you, Spencer, my daughter stopped playing netball actually and hockey by the time she was 15. I don't know what she's doing now. It worries me where she goes and what she gets up to. When I'm asking you today, what concerns you the most about the health of teenage girls? A few of you have texted in saying smoking, bad behaviour, don't know what's happening. And of course, the big question, which we always come round to when we're talking about young girls, is eating and what they're eating and how they're eating. Are they eating healthily?
This is Eye on Health, your weekly health and well-being show with Suzanne Radford. Dubai Today, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Dr. Kate Jordan, specialist in family medicine with a special focus on sports medicine, based at Valiant Clinic in Citywalk, alongside Suzanne Skelding, director of sport of Are You Active, and Spencer Lodge, founder of Make It Happen. So let me find out a little bit about you when you were a teenager. So Dr. Kate, you already mentioned that you were very sporty. Advice to your 16-year-old former self, what would you do differently, if there's anything, looking back?
That's a good question. I guess my advice to my 16-year-old self would be, don't worry so much. I was a swimmer and used to spend 25 hours a week swimming, and wanted to be a doctor too. So I used to worry that I had the balance wrong, or that I wasn't keeping up with either thing. And I think in hindsight, I did just fine. You know, I managed to do both things for some time. I think I certainly wasn't one of the cool kids at school. Do you know, and I think in a lot of schools, the people that tend to work hard and not seen as within the in crowd. And for me, sport provided that kind of group of friends and support. And to the friends from childhood I'm still friends with are all my swimming, my sports friends. So I guess my advice to myself would be, chill out, everything's fine, and don't worry if you don't fit in everywhere. It's okay, you just have to find your niche. And I guess, again, going back to sport, for all sport for girls, that can be the thing that is where they find their way and where they find their crowd, you know.
I think that sounds very natural. I think just listening to you, that sounds like me, you know, that, and you almost sound like my mother there, like, don't worry too much, don't worry, everything will be fine, it will work itself out, you're doing all right. And I think that's a natural feeling for a young teenager, boy or girl, that you will always think, am I doing enough, am I doing it right, is it good enough, you know, all of those things. But I don't remember when I was a teenager ever hearing the term anxiety or depression within my friends or within my parents' discussions. Do you, Suzanne?
No, you're absolutely right. Those words just weren't bandied around at all. I was the sporty one at school. I was the joiner. I joined anything, really, that was part of a group, whether it was events, whether it was drama, or obviously netball was a huge part of my life, and athletics in the summer. That's kind of like how we rolled. And for me, it was all about being part of something. And I think that was just the greatest feeling ever. And I shall never, ever forget that. We just didn't have any stress. I was just a bit more carefree, I think, really, back in those days. And I think if anything, I think all teenagers, we talked about this a bit earlier, all teenagers are in a bit of a rush. They want to try everything, and that's where you talk about the smoking and all the other things that that happen. It would just, my advice to my old self was, don't be in such a hurry. I think I perhaps could have enjoyed those teenage years a little bit longer, but I think today perhaps those teenage years are swallowed up even quicker, unfortunately. And I think probably social media's got a lot to do with that.
When we last met, Spencer, you were talking about diet and nutrition for teenagers and teenage boys. You were saying, you know, they'll eat you out of a house and home, they'll eat everything, you know, in the cupboards, in the fridge. What about girls? Is that the same with your girls? Do they eat everything that's going?
Well, I think my eldest now, she's not quite as bad, but my youngest, I think, yeah, they go through that kind of 13 to 15 year old kind of age bracket where, well, mine did anyway, where they eat anything. I think they're more conscious now of what they should eat and what they shouldn't eat. It doesn't mean that they do eat the right things, but they're kind of conscious and they're aware of it. I wish that they would take the kind of advice that they're given to focus on the healthy things that all parents want their kids to eat. But it's not about necessarily what's in the cupboards at home. School food. I mean, really, a lot of school food is really, it's awful. And yes, of course, you've got lots of good school food as well. But when the options are there for them to eat rubbish, and there are options for them to eat rubbish, invariably the kids are going to pick up the stuff that tastes the nicest rather than does them the most service. So that, for me, is an area that will, you know, Jamie Oliver's doing a lot of work on it, isn't it? But it just eternally, I get frustrated with how you can even go to school today. And although, yes, they all argue there's nice options and there's good stuff and healthy stuff to eat, why are there French fries on the side still? You know, well, why is that sitting there? You know,
but then isn't it okay at that age, because they're growing and if they are being active, you can kind of eat what you like. Surely that's a part of those.
No, I don't agree with that, because, yeah, of course you're healthy and you're active, so you can consume more calories. But, you know, one of the worst things that people can consume is sugar, but they do in massive, massive quantities. And sugar is there, accessible to all kids at all times in all ways, whether that be through chocolate bars or different types of candy or desserts and stuff. Fizzy drinks as well. I don't get why there isn't enough time, effort and energy spent by the people that are providing these options to kids outside of the family home to make that diet better, so that the kids can have a better chance of being better educated about it, and so that then once they're educated they can lead that through their teenage years and maybe into their adult life. To me, I think it's important.
Well, interesting, looking here at the National Eating Disorders.org page, in the United States, 20 million women and 10 million men suffer from a clinically significant eating disorder at some time in their life. That's including anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorder. And looking here, over one half of teenage girls and nearly one third of teenage boys use unhealthy weight control behaviours such as skipping meals, fasting, smoking cigarettes, vomiting and taking laxatives. So that's quite concerning. I'm sure most of people in your sort of sphere, in your family, in your network, are healthy, but it is interesting that these stats are coming up more and more. So what do you say when it comes to diet and nutrition and how young girls are using their food, enjoying their food, Kate?
I think from my perspective, it's really important for teenage girls to have a balanced diet. So I think we just need to be a little bit careful of being very prescriptive about diets. And I think, again, going back to the social media aspect, there is a huge amount of information available to girls now on clean eating and, you know, very paleo diets and that kind of thing. They're very restrictive. And in terms of a growing teenager, I think we need to really steer clear of those kind of terminologies. I think the best thing that we can advise our teenagers to do is to eat a healthy diet, lots of greens, lots of coloured fruits and vegetables, and a proportion of protein and some carbohydrates, some starchy carbohydrates. And I think if we can teach teenagers how their plates should look, you know, so about half of that plate should be fruits and vegetables, and then a quarter of that should be starchy carbohydrates, a little bit less than a quarter should be protein, and then the rest should be fat, so about 10% fat. If we can show them what a good plate should look like, then I think that's the most important thing. I think, you know, Spencer talking about chips at school, I agree, chips, there will be some children who will choose chips every day, and that's a bad idea. But I also think we shouldn't be saying to our children, we should never have chips, because everything in moderation is the right way to eat. And I think if we're teaching our children those kind of skills in teenagehood, then those are things they'll take through to their life in a healthy, so they'll have a healthy attitude towards food.
Well, I think if as adults, and we talk about this on the health show all the time, that there are more and more issues with the gut, you know, problems there. So if we backtrack that right back to our childhoods and how our diets have changed with the different kinds of foods that we're eating, an interesting article you can check out for yourself, what you ate in high school could affect your breast cancer risk level. This is by Well Plus Good by Alison Feller, and what she's highlighting is how fibre is really important in our diet and for young people's diet, and there are links there possibly to the prevention of breast cancer, but for you to check out for yourself. What do you say, Suzanne?
Well, I think it goes back to what we started talking about, is about what do we want the girls to do? We want them to be involved in some kind of team sport. And I think when you're in some kind of team, whether that's netball, which obviously I'd much rather you all did, but it could be any sport, it doesn't matter. Girls talk, they talk to each other, they encourage each other, and I think it's that kind of thing of, well, what did you do? And if it does start with the family. I have to say that I disagree a little bit with you. I think that it needs to be the family that start this. I was brought up by a Swiss mother, and basically food was really important, mealtimes were important, and it's sitting round the table that's important, because that's how we learn how to eat and what a plate, as Kate is saying, should look like. And it's getting into a team environment where you can share that information. That's a kind of really powerful social media, isn't it? I think the active social media where you're going and you're getting involved and you're sharing your own experiences. But I really do believe it starts at home. That's something that's vital.
Lots of people texting in. We're going to share all your messages when we come back. People talking about concerns about daughters that are skipping meals, others agreeing with you, Spencer, others disagreeing with you with regards to food and what children have access to. And yeah, I'm going to share them all when I come back. Stay with me.
This is Eye on Health, your weekly health and well-being show with Suzanne Radford. Dubai Today, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Dr. Kate Jordan, specialist in family medicine with a special focus on sports medicine, based at Valiant Clinic, specialising in many different things, including musculoskeletal injuries, concussion assessment and management, fatigue and underperformance, exercise prescription and advice on exercise for with illness, and the list goes on. Alongside Kate today, we've got Suzanne Skelding, director of sport of Are You Active? She's a mum of two grown-up children, Rick and Lauren. They're in their 20s, and Suzanne has been active all of her life and continues to be, doing a really great work here in the UAE with a focus on netball. And then we've got Spencer Lodge, founder of Make It Happen. So he works with businesses. He's a coach. He's a trainer. He works with individuals and businesses, inspiring them in the workplace. But also, as well, very active indeed. He's got challenge after challenge coming up. In fact, just this Thursday, he's heading off to Everest Base Camp. He's going to be climbing beyond the base camp to 6,000 metres. Why are you doing that? What's inspiring you this time, just to keep raising the bar?
Because it's there. No, that's what a lot of people say. The real reason for doing it is twofold. Number one, because it's a challenge that I want to do, and number two, because there's an orphanage in Uganda that I want to raise some money for, and I want to help contribute towards a library for these kids, and they've got a really, really tough life, and when you get exposed to that kind of stuff, it hits a chord, and it gets you to start thinking about yourself and how lucky you are to have the life that you've got. So they're the two reasons, if I'm really honest, Suzanne.
And as we're talking about young girls today, I'm looking at the World Health Organization when it comes to adolescents, health risks and solutions. You're mentioning there Uganda, just globally here, yes, estimated 1.2 million adolescents died. This was in 2015. That's over 3,000 every day, mostly from preventable or treatable causes. Road traffic injuries were the leading cause of death in 2015. And other major causes of adolescent deaths, including lower respiratory infections and diseases, drowning is on that list. And then globally, there are 44 births per 1,000 to girls aged 15 to 19 per year. And half of all mental health disorders in adulthood start by the age of 14. But most cases are undetected and untreated. So that's why it's important to have these kinds of conversations. And we talk about our nearest and dearest, but we're also connecting with girls across the planet as well, and trying to raise young girls up out of poverty through education. So that kind of thing that you're doing there in Uganda is really, really important. Let's take a look at some of the messages coming in. Lots of people texting in. One here saying, totally agree regarding school food that you mentioned before, Spencer. And what about the junk they give children on airplanes? When people say a little bit of everything, it boggles my mind. A little bit of poison in crisps, sweets and fizzy drinks, is that okay? That's from one of our listeners. Also here, somebody talking about their daughters. I have two daughters and they're constantly being told that the eldest is prettier, both explicitly and in less obvious ways. They're both close and love each other, but it makes me so angry. It's difficult enough to raise girls to value themselves beyond their looks, but any ideas from the panel on how to make my youngest less affected by this, less self-conscious by this? Neither of them are very active and I can't seem to convince them to get sporty. Ages are 12 and 14. Who'd like to respond to this?
I think you get involved in a team in some way. If you don't play sport, then come along and get involved in another way. Maybe you've got some coaching that you might want to come and do. Just come and help. Just come and get involved as a volunteer. There's nothing like that kind of feel-good factor. You can get in touch with us. You can come along and go to some of our younger groups where we've got 5 and 6-year-olds. You don't have to even be able to catch a ball. It doesn't matter. You can be part of this, of instilling this kind of want and desire to be part of a group and a team sport. There's medical proof and evidence that shows that being part of a team, all the social aspects that has, it means that people don't take to smoking, they eat better food, they talk about more positive things, and that they're not spending time on their phones. So please feel free to get in touch and come along, and if you want to come and help us out, we're delighted to
have
you.
And that's all very well and good, but also a group of girls together, let's face it, I'm one of them, I'm a girl, I can say this, but sometimes it's not always jolly, happy and easy, is it? You know, girls can be quite, I mean, you know, do you ever get that where there's a bit of, you know, conflict, or there is the eyeing each other up and who looks better than the other, and that that competition off the pitch?
There's definitely that competition off the pitch. We're girls. That's what we do very well. We're good at gossiping. We're good at talking about other people. And all you can do is be a role model and praise those role models. We have a great comment that we talk about playing in the spirit of the game. And we instill that in our young officiators, to instill that in our players, to instill that, would you believe, in our adult parents and coaches who are probably the worst on the sideline. Actually, the girls aren't as bad as perhaps some of their parents. So we talk about the spirit of the game, playing in the spirit of the game and being in the spirit of the game all the time. So you're right, it exists. You know, life in the world isn't perfect, but we do everything that we can to make sure that we are the correct role models.
Did you ever have it with your daughter, Spencer, where there was comparisons made?
Yeah, there's been comparisons made. My youngest was bullied terribly at school, and that had a real impact on her being part of any team and wanting to join any team or group, or in any way kind of like get involved with potentially the same damage that she might receive from the girls that she did at school. So for her, it was really important for us to consider other things for her. And so we took her ice skating and we taught her to play tennis and squash. It didn't have to be team sport. It was something that she could be involved in, that she could like, and just give herself an opportunity to increase her confidence. So, but the other point you've made about the one being prettier than the other, that kind of stuff was talked about and made. But you have to deal with that very, very swiftly, I think. It's a really serious issue. It's something that I was exposed to, and my youngest became very aware of it very quickly. And it wasn't true. It was just, you know, it really wasn't. But that's what she felt, and that's what we had to handle.
Very, very difficult. Very interesting, actually. And that's, you know, understanding and picking up on those sort of nuances, I suppose, between your children and their friends. Yeah,
I think you've when we're talking about a team, yes, obviously netball is a team sport, but we have to all work together as a team here. These are our future generation. These are our daughters that we want to lead the world, and we need to work together. Whether we're a parent or a coach or a spectator, a friend, a teacher, everybody has to work together and deliver the same message. So we need to be not overplaying the girls. We need to make sure that the girls are included. We need to ensure that the girls are all playing in the spirit of the game and all feeling that thing. So that's the team that needs to work together.
Then one here for you, Kate, see what you think about this. My 15-year-old daughter skips her lunch, but then comes home and empties the fridge. It's practically impossible to make her eat lunch. The same often applies for breakfast with my 13-year-old son, who has to force down his breakfast. How can I really make my daughter eat her lunch? I know that she's controlling her weight by doing this.
That's a really difficult one, and there's definitely peer pressure around that kind of eating pattern. I think for me, it's really important that children know that food is fuel. It's like having a Ferrari and putting the best petrol into it. You know, you need to fuel your body with food to be able to do sport, to be able to socialise, to be able to work at school. Everything that your body does needs food. And it's something I talk a lot to athletes about, is that consistent fueling over the day. So you wouldn't want to run your car to empty and then fill it up again. It's not good for the engine. It's the same for the body, particularly when you're growing, and even more so if you're active. That fuel is the building block to muscles, to bones. We see injuries as a result of that. You might get the right number of calories in the day, but if those calories are not happening at the right times, then the body can't regenerate itself, because we're regenerating all the time. You know, our body is turning over cells repeatedly, continuously. So I think it's just that education for children around the reason for it. It's you know, I would use that analogy, the food is fuel, and having that healthy attitude towards food is really important.
Also, somebody here saying that my daughter's face, 15-year-old's face, started to clear up in the last 3 days, and I think it's because she's not eating rubbish and she's fasting and eating healthy food for iftar and suhoor. Thank you for that message. It's another area, isn't it, for teenagers, for both teenage girls and boys, their bodies are changing, and with that, for some, can be issues with their skin, acne. I know a couple of people have said about how they've noticed changes in their children's confidence, and it's sometimes to do with that, whether it's they have to start wearing glasses or their skin changes or whatever's going on inside internally as well. So messages there. When it comes to acne, sometimes you can't help that no matter what you eat, but any advice when it comes to skin and taking care of the skin?
I think The thing to be clear about is that often acne is hormonally driven, and that's frustrating, and there can be a genetic component, and sometimes there is nothing that you can do. It's a case of waiting it out with the correct medication, because sometimes medicine is helpful, and we don't want children's confidence to drop because of acne. So there are many good treatments for acne around, and I would encourage a doctor's opinion if that is something that's significant. But also that, again, going back to the fuel analogy, if you're putting good stuff in, then good stuff comes out, you feel better. We all know that if we have a bad couple of days of eating, we're going to feel maybe a little bit more sluggish than usual. So, you know, we're designed to eat natural food. You know, we're designed to eat plants, we're designed to eat animal protein and dairy, particularly in a smaller quantity. If we're having a diet that is rich in all of those things in balance, in the right balance, then we're optimizing everything else, so skin being one of those. I think I would go down that route rather than restrictive, cutting things out. It tends not to work hugely well, in my opinion.
When we come back, we'll hear from my guests, who, let's face it, all three really are into their exercise, sport, activity, adventures. But what about if you've got a teenager that's in the gym too much, exercising too much? Is that possible? Somebody here is concerned about that. We'll address that and more when we come back.
This is Ion Health, your weekly health and well-being show with Suzanne Radford. Dubai Today, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Let's address first the text about over-exercise. So a teenager that is in the gym every day and, in the parents' opinion, is exercising too much. It's like an addiction. What do you say to that?
I think it depends really what that child is doing in the gym. We talked earlier on about the physical activity guidelines being 60 minutes of activity a day, which is more than adults. So children do need to be more active. If it's things like weightlifting, for example. We know weightlifting can be detrimental to teenagers. Their ends of their bones are still open, they're still growing. So those kind of things I would discourage. I think it really needs an open dialogue with that child as to what they're doing and why they're doing it. Are they using exercise, as we talked about before, as a means of improving their mood? Is there something going on underlying that? Is that child happiest in the gym? Is that where their friends are? You know, I mentioned before about finding your crowd, and is that person's happy place the gym? In which case we should be encouraging that, but trying to make sure that happens in a controlled way and not to the detriment of other things. Children have lots of conflicting pulls on their time, and obviously education is a massive one. So I'm by no means suggesting that activity should come at the detriment of education, and it's just really sitting down with that child, I think, and having a look at their week and how it pans out, and having a really open discussion about why that might be happening, I think.
Can we not address the parent here for a second? Because we're sitting thinking about the child. Is the parent someone who knows how much too much exercise is? Is the parent somebody that doesn't do any exercise themselves? Is the parent somebody that's sitting there and talking from a position where they really don't know? I would probably talk into the parent first and understand that side of it.
So you don't think they should necessarily be concerned if you're...
Well, if your child was playing 4 hours of football a day, you wouldn't have a problem with it, because that's what we used to do as kids. We'd play football, then we'd go in the park and we'd run around until the lights came on the streets, and we'd have to go home. That kind of stuff happened all the time and nobody cared about it. But because they're in a gym, and as we've just spoken about, with their friends maybe, enjoying themselves, doing something they love. Okay, I understand it if it's something extreme, but does the parent really understand themselves and what knowledge they've got around that matter? And if the parent doesn't, then I would ask them to get some knowledge, first of all, and some understanding before they start thinking about or worrying about their child.
Interesting. Well, maybe there's other symptoms there to raise concerns. But I think what it also highlights there is that you can over-exercise as a teenager. We want people to be active. We're encouraging people to be active. But when it becomes a behaviour that's like an addiction, you know, a prop, and if it's about counting every single calorie and every little bit of what is muscle or not muscle on a young woman's body, then there's obsessive behaviours coming in there, possibly.
I agree with that. I'm not going to argue with that point of view, but I don't think that lady's question or that caller's question was really the issue here. Yes, of course, there's the extremes in everything, isn't there? We all know that. There's the extremes that exist, but... Come on, blooming hell, you know, when I was a kid, you know, your mum didn't want you in the house. She wanted you to get out. Go and play.
There's lots of messages coming. Let me try and squeeze them in. One here from John saying, I don't understand why it's so terrible for teenagers to experience a bit of low self-esteem for a while. No one is happy all the time, and adults all have their issues. What do you say about that, Suzanne?
That's a great comment, and it's really valid and absolutely true. And this is what we're talking about today. It's sport. Whatever your chosen sport is, you have to learn to win, lose and draw. I think out of a loss, you gain an awful lot more insight into yourself or your players and how you deal with that. And that just replicates life. We don't always get what we want. Things don't always go the way that we want them to go. So playing sport teaches you this great life skill. So that caller is absolutely spot on. I think it's really important that we're opening up these avenues to play sport, do sport, be involved in sport, so that we do experience that winning and losing feeling.
Opportunity to fail.
Opportunity to fail is massive. It's really important. How do you deal with that? You know, we're very quick to sort of go, oh, well, that umpire or that ref, you know, should have done this, that and the other in a game maybe. But it really gives that self-reflection of what could I have done? How could I have done it? It means they're going to talk about it as a team. So there's that social element where they're going to be talking about their failures, how they could have done better, what they need to do, self-evaluation. It's such a massive life skill.
And also when it comes to encouraging people to be active, so quite a few people have said it's all very well and good, but I can't get my teenager to do anything. And I don't know what the answer is to this, but what can you impart to us perhaps to help?
I think the most important thing is to find out what makes your teenager tick. You know, what is the thing that they enjoy? And we think about physical activity as being maybe team sports or running or swimming, but there's so many other activities which will have you being physically active. So, you know, if they enjoy animals, get them volunteering at Canine and go and walk some dogs. If they enjoy crafts, maybe get them setting up a stall and making things, and they'll be lifting, they'll be carrying, they'll be moving. It's just encouraging teenagers to be out of the house, to be particularly off social media and computers, in my opinion, and getting out and doing things and just really having that dialogue with your child as to what it is that they enjoy and finding something that fits into that niche. And we're really lucky in Dubai that pretty much every opportunity is out there for children if you're willing to go out and look for it.
And then the difficult conversation. So without going into too much detail, but two people in the room here have got teenage kids. When it comes to sex education, when it comes to the dangers of alcohol, when they're not in your eyesight, how do you know that they're all right, that they've got all that they need to know to be safe and to be okay?
What did you do 10 years ago? What did you do 20 years ago? What did you do 30 years ago? I think it's exactly the same as you do now. Every parent can only do their best, okay? They can only try their hardest and do their best in the way that they see fit to try and be a good parent. And if that means teaching their kids about the rights and wrongs, well, guess what? Every parent's going to do it in different ways, ways that they believe is right. So, you know, how do you protect? How did you protect me? I'm 47, you know, 30 years ago, I was 17 years old. God only knows what my mum was thinking, but you know, she did her best, you know. How do you do it now? And I think that we do sometimes stress to look for the absolute perfect answer, and everybody is busy telling you what you should do and how you should do it and how you should teach it. But as far as I'm concerned, every parent's going to try their hardest to be a good parent, because that's what naturally comes to nearly every parent, the one that I've ever known anyway.
And Suzanne?
I think Kate touched on it earlier. It's about communication and that open dialogue, and I think that's really important. So the answer to your question is, we don't know what they're doing when they're out of our eyesight. We have no idea. But what we do hope is that when we are in their eyesight, when they are around that table having a meal, or we're somewhere shopping together, that, you know, you can have the dialogue of like the what ifs. And when things go wrong, can you talk about them, and can you come back around the table to be able to have that open dialogue and know that it's okay to have made a mistake? It comes back to sport. You make mistakes, things happen. You drop the ball, the opposition get it. It's the same. I know that's perhaps a really crass analogy, but at the end of the day, it's all about helping each other. And I think that open dialogue is really crucial here.
And I think just to remember, and we know this, but just in case we're getting caught up in our busy lives or losing sight through technology, which we need, but getting that balance right, at the end of the day, they are growing human beings, which means in mind and body. And for that, they need the right nutrients. They need the right social guidance and assistance, and they need activity to be active and mobile, because all of that will be feeding their bones, their body, nourishing them and their mind. So it's all, as the caretakers of those young people, it's our responsibility to lay the foundations for them to follow. Thank you very much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure talking to Dr. Kate Jordan, specialist in family medicine with a special focus on sports medicine, based at Valiant Clinic in City Walk, alongside Suzanne Skelding, director of Sport of Are You Active, and Spencer Lodge, founder of Make It Happen. All the details are up on our blog post today at dubaii1038.com/dubai today. All the contact details to connect and find out more about my guests. And all the best for you, Spencer. Thursday, it's a big day. You're heading off to Everest, so we wish you all the...
Get in.
And we look forward to seeing the photos, following the journey, and hearing about it when you come back.
You'll do.